Are you ready? The Cornelia Stephanie Show Lady Boss knows what women want: to be free to speak their voice, to live in financial freedom, and build businesses that radiate wealth, leaving legacies we can be proud of. Every Friday, we bring you Lady Boss entrepreneurs that are changing the world. Diane Solano, the energy entrepreneur. Dana Terrio, handle the lump, heal your life. And Joan Sharp, changing the conversation from money to vision. See you Fridays. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Cornelia Stephanie Show. This is the episode of Being Anti-Racist, Part 3. And just today, before I was preparing for the show, because we did a pre-record that we're going to share with you here in just a few minutes, where I invited my co-host to come on to the show to talk with me about how to be an anti-racist and how to have these difficult conversations with each other and talk about racism openly and honestly so that we can really get to the root core of how we've been dealing. I mean, how we've been living with racism here on this planet for way too long. And as I was sitting here thinking about coming on, I was tapping into just how sad I am and how sad I feel that we are still in this space, because as you will hear when I speak with Latrice, David, Jennifer, and Christielle, that racism, you know, according to where I was asking them, where is racism still happening in their communities, and how it's still all there. And, you know, we can't heal something that we don't acknowledge. And that's why I wanted to create this movement, Being Anti-Racist, to invite each and every person really to take a look at where they are within themselves, to do that self-inquiry and look at where are they and how do they feel about, are they a racist? How do they feel about racism in their own consciousness, in their own being? Because like I said, we can't heal something that we don't acknowledge. And 2020, you know, I mean, when we're looking at what has changed for us here in 2020 is just what we've all had to, you know, deal with so much loss and so much, you know, change with each other, with the pandemic, so much loss, so many different things, loss of life, that there's just been so much. But I know that it's all happening for us so that we can heal the division, what has kept us separate from each other. Because as you will hear many of the co-hosts speaking, is that we are human beings having a spiritual experience, no matter what color, no matter what race we are. We are all human beings. And really, it's time for us now to openly speak with each other. And especially, I think Latrice was talking about that, how exhausted she is. And I'm feeling that too. It's like, wow, you know, how exhausted we all are to keep, you know, to keep talking about this. And so, but we need to do it. We need to do it. And so maybe that if you hear, you know, something in this video today, that you would share this with people from your family, people from your community, and help us spread this message. One of the things that I'm really, really inspired by is this keynote speech by Representative John Lewis, Congressman John Lewis. And, you know, he has recently passed, and we also lost a great role model and a great example of what we need to do as a humanity to show up for each other, to speak out for each other, and to stand up and speak out for the injustices that are still happening. And it is with this movement here, this is a part of something that I can do, of, you know, holding the space, calling people together so that we can have these conversations. And then hopefully, little by little by little, we can make the change. So what we're going to do is I'm going to play the keynote speech from Representative John Lewis. He gave it, it was a commencement speech that he did in, I think, in 2014. And it's a template. It's a template for us because it's probably the best keynote speech I've ever heard. And it's less than 5 minutes. We're going to go straight from that speech then into Being Anti-Racist Part 3. And thank you so much for listening and tuning into the Cornelia Stephanie Show. If you would like to support us, please share this show and this video with others who are also ready to, you know, take that mantle on, and that is to be an anti-racist here on this planet, and so that we can live in our humanity. And that's showing each other how much we love each other, because life is short. And you know, the way life is, it's scary, it's short, but love is what can heal us all. And so thank you so much for listening, thank you so much for tuning in, and here is the video of John Lewis.
I grew up in rural Alabama, 50 miles from Montgomery, outside of a little place called Troy. My father was a sharecropper, a tenant farmer. But back in 1944, when I was only 4 years old, my father had saved $300. And with the $300, he bought 110 acres of land. My family is still on that land today. How many of you remember when you were four? Now, what happened to the rest of us? It was many, many years ago when we would visit the little town of Troy, visit Montgomery, visit Tuskegee, visit Birmingham. I saw those signs that said white men, colored women, white waiting. I would come home and ask my mother, my father, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, why? And they would say, that's the way it is. Don't get in the way. Don't get in trouble. But one day in 1955, 15 years old, in the 10th grade, I heard about Rosa Parks. I heard the words of Martin Luther King Jr. on our radio. 1957, I met Rosa Parks at the age of 17. In 1958, at the age of 18, I met Martin Luther King Jr., and these two individuals inspired me to get in the way, to get in trouble. So I come here to say to you this morning, on this beautiful campus, with your great education, you must find a way to get in the way. You must find a way to get in trouble, good trouble, necessary trouble. Use your education. You have wonderful teachers, wonderful professors, researchers. Use what you have. Use your learning. Use your tools to help make our country and make our world a better place where no one will be left out or left behind. You can do it, and you must do it. It is your time. In a few short days, we will commemorate what we call the Mississippi Summer Project. For more than 1,000 students from all over America, many from abroad, made a trip to Mississippi to encourage people to register to vote. And a summer night of June 21st, 1964, three young men that I knew, two whites and one African-American, Nicholas Werner, Andy Goodman, and James Cheney, went out to investigate the burning of an African-American church that was used for voter registration workshop. These three young men detained by the sheriff, taken to jail, taken out of jail, turned over to the Klan, where they were beaten, shot, and killed. And I tell students today, these three young men didn't die in Vietnam. They didn't die in the Middle East or Eastern Europe. They didn't die in Africa or Central or South America. They died right here in our own country, trying to help all of our citizens become participants in the democratic process. As young people, you must understand that there are forces that want to take us back to another period. But you must say that we're not going back. We made too much progress and we're going forward. There may be some setbacks, some delays, some disappointment, but you must never, ever give up or give in. You must keep the faith and keep your eyes on the prize. That is your calling. That is your mission. That is your moral obligation. That is your mandate. Get out there and do it. Get in the way. We all live in the same house. And it doesn't matter whether we are black or white, Latino, Asian American, or Native American. It doesn't matter whether we are straight or gay. We are one people. We are one family. We all live in the same house. Be bold. Be courageous. Stand up. Speak up. Speak out. And find a way to create the beloved community, the beloved world, a world of peace, a world that recognizes the dignity of all humankind. Never become bitter, never become hostile, never hate.
All right, live everyone, welcome back to the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Be an Anti-Racist, Part 3.
Thank you very much.
I have my beautiful co-hosts here with me today that we're going to talk about this discussion that we need to have that makes a lot of people uncomfortable because the discussions haven't been had. And that's what we want to do. During our last two episodes, which I'm going to put the link for those below so that you can watch them if you haven't watched them yet. And, you know, because a lot of times when we are around uncomfortable discussions, we just, we don't want to have the conversation because we might want to, we're afraid we're going to say something wrong, or we're afraid we're going to hurt somebody's feelings, and we're afraid about fear or something that's holding us back, or even, are we going to agree? Are we going to agree on the same values and principles? And so the point is to be able to create a beloved community, to be able to talk to each other and to listen to each other and to share our views, holding a loving space and listen to each other. And that's what we want to do. And we want to, you know, talk about racism and how not to be a racist, and how can we have these discussions with each other so that we can get to the root core of what this really is all about. So welcome to the show, co-hosts. And so why don't we start with you, Latrice? Why don't you say hi and also introduce yourself, and then, you know, pass it over to your husband.
So I'm Latrice Love Goodlett. And I do things in community. My interest is in building community in safer spaces and having difficult conversations. I do consulting work, public speaking, and I'm a certified mediator.
Wow, that's so concise. Goodlett, I'm a longtime educator and musician. I'm starting a music label these days, and I've been educating youth in the Bay Area in various capacities in public, charter, and private institutions for the last quarter century or so.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. What about you, Jennifer?
Jennifer Dismangalis. I'm a human resource director. I've been a human resource director for about 21 years. So started off in healthcare and now moved into the manufacturing field. So also a mother of three. or my youngest is 15.
Great, and I'm really glad to hear that. And I wanted to ask too, that at some point, I sure would love it if your son would join us.
Okay, he's not home today, but yes.
But no, maybe you want to ask him if he would join us, because I sure would love to hear also his views and what he has to share also. Okay. Yeah, okay. That would be great. And Christelle.
Hi, I'm Christelle Biga. I'm originally from Cameroon. That's why you have this beautiful accent. I live in Los Angeles, and I'm a transformational coach and a speaker. And I mostly work with the female coaches. So yeah, that's what I do.
Good. And it's great to have you, because you're going to be having your own podcast on Transformation Talk Radio Network. That's how we met. And I'm excited that you're part of the TTR family, but then also part of this. And yesterday when you and I met, I was, just intuitively felt guided to invite you to the conversation. And I'm glad I did. And I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you all are here. And you too, David. And then we even have a little Sankara that's also here. So you might hear him in the background, but that's part of life. That's how it goes. So part of the discussion that we want to have today is, first of all, Latrice, you and I, we were talking before we came on today about what it brought up, you know, during the first podcast, what came up for you. And you shared something with me, and I thought this would be a great way to start today.
Yeah, I think one of the things, there were several things, but one of the things that came up for me was just, how do you operate really like in relationships when you're having to have difficult conversations, depending on how you're raised, and wanting to be respectful and negotiating when there may possibly be a complete difference of opinion. How do you really manage that? So that's part of what I do professionally, but it is very different when there are family dynamics involved in your own family, right? How do you respectfully have the conversations? How do you bring that up, and how do you move it forward?
Yeah, and that was good, because when we were talking about it, what came out is that, yeah, this is probably the same thing that many other people experience too, and they just don't know how to bridge that area. And so then nothing gets said, because that keeps the separation going instead of opening up to an inclusive way to talk about things that may be uncomfortable, right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And so thinking about like not wanting to hurt somebody's feelings, you know, there being possible like acrimonious feelings left over. But I think understanding that when you're in relationship with someone, that there's a little bit more grace and a little bit more space. And so you definitely want to take ownership for the impact of what you say to someone. And, you know, there are different levels and different degrees to which difficult conversations could be had. So you may not be able to hash out everything all at once, but you can definitely speak in your truth. And, you know, that be enough that you're operating in integrity in that way and moving the difficult conversation forward, even if you don't see eye to eye right away.
Yeah, I think, you know, for people to be able to just say, you know, I'm willing to have this conversation, or even being willing to just even that having that willingness to have a different opinion, or, you know, we may not agree on everything, and that's okay too. You know, because we're all raised differently, and like, what did you say, David? How many billions of points of views did you mention earlier?
0.7, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, there's so many different points of views, and all of it matters. All of it has, you know, gets to have a consideration. And so how do we bridge those gaps? And that's what it is that we want to do with having these conversations with racism. One of the things yesterday, when Christelle and I were talking about, I asked you, how do you feel about racism with what's going on today? And would you mind sharing what you said with me yesterday?
Yes, sure. Honestly, when you asked me the question, the first thing I wanted to tell you is, I don't want to talk about it because with everything going on, I have had difficult conversations. And at some point I just said, it's better to not have the conversation anymore to protect myself from being hurt and to protect the other person from hurting them. Because when you are hurt, you want to hurt back. So I just felt like the best way to not hurt myself or hurt someone, you know, I'm having conversation is not to have the conversation at all. So that was the first instinctive reaction I had to tell you, I don't want to talk about it. And then I just opened up because maybe I felt safe to have that conversation with you. And I shared the perspective that people are not talking about or I'm not hearing. Maybe people are talking about it, but I haven't heard that part of the conversation. The conditioning in the Black people's subconscious mind. You know, we have been treated and told so many times that we are less than, that at some level we started believing that it's true. Even if we don't, we can be offended if we think about it, like, what do you mean? But at some subconscious level, if we look at the way we behave when we are, you know, next to a white person, for example, we feel different. So what does that mean? Some people act differently. We'll expect, you know, to be treated differently because they are next to a white person. That's a conditioning that nobody's talking about. And that's one of the biggest, as I was telling you yesterday, that's a wound that is really big in the Black people mind, because that's terrible to believe in that lie that you're less than or someone else. I will share a story. Last year, I was at an event in Palm Springs. It was a huge event. And I was with a girl, a girlfriend of mine. My friend, she's African American. And we met a really nice white girl over there. She was really bubbly. And then she said, hey, let me introduce you to my best friend. So when she found her best friend, which was a Black girl, she came with her and she introduced us to her. So, hi, nice to meet you. And then they left. The Black girl was just normal. She wasn't as bubbly as a white girl. So when she left, my friend made a comment that will probably illustrate what I'm talking about here. She said, look at how she's acting up. She feels better than us because her friend is white. So those are stories that are built in the subconscious mind of Black people. Somebody will judge you because you have a white friend and they will say you feel better. What does that mean? That when you have a white friend, you're something else. So what does that mean? That we are not as good as white people. We are not as, you know, at the same level. So it gives you an extra point or something extra. So those are the conversations we are not having between Black people. What do you think? What do we think about ourselves? How do we see ourselves next to other races? Do we feel equal or do we feel like it's an extra, you know, something? Will we not have that? That's a hard conversation to have. I know a lot of Black people can be offended now hearing me say that because like, what are you talking about? That's not true. But if we are honest, if we're having those hard conversations, we realize that we believed in that story and we have to change that narrative in our subconscious mind. We have to really believe, instead of just fighting to be treated equally, really believe that we are equal and stop judging each other and giving ourselves names. She feels better because she has a white friend. Oh, she's acting this way because she's married to a white guy. Or maybe why you might. So those conversations, we need to have them amongst ourselves. Yes, there is a conversation with the other races telling them, stop treating us that way. But we need to also have this conversation among ourselves and say, it's okay, we are the same. So there is no reason why it's a problem or it should be a conversation to have because somebody is next to a white person or friend with a white person or married to a white person, whatever that the relationship looks like. So that's the conversation I mentioned yesterday with you that I'm not hearing, but I know that conversation is real.
Excellent. David, you were going to say something?
There's so many different ways that we internalize mm-hmm. racism. And as a teacher, I've seen it in the classroom, how students treat each other, mm-hmm. or assumptions that students may have about themselves, or students and assumptions students may even have about me. We judge each other, and the problem, I'll say for people of African descent, is when you're evaluating somebody, especially each other, from a frame that's not your own. Mm-hmm. And I think our great evolution, as for all colonized people's evolution, is to come back and reconnect to your root and evaluate yourself from your own paradigm. And I think when you gain strength and security in that, you learn to appreciate other people's paradigms and where they're coming from. I noticed, like, even if in the streets, you don't see the kids, say teenage boys. The teenage boys that are having problems with other teenage boys, especially from other ethnicities, and even within their own ethnicities, are the ones that have not learned to know themselves and appreciate themselves. Those people that feel secure in themselves, they tend to appreciate and love and respect their own story and their people's story, and that automatically makes them understand that everybody has a story. Mm-hmm. And so I respect, I know you have a story, I know how you got here. Black kid may say to a Mexican kid, you know, okay, I know that he has a path to why he and his family are here and what they must have been through, and I have a story and I respect my story of what I've been through. I honor my cultural roots before colonization and enslavement, and I hope and encourage you to honor yours before that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wonderful. Jennifer, you have something you want to say?
Well, to kind of tie into Christelle, I think one of the biggest areas, you know, we experience, especially as a woman, is to ask why, you know, I think, wonder if it is an inferiority that you feel, you know, when you see another, for example, the dating scene. You have a black man dating a white woman. Where does that anger stem from? Because a lot of women will get upset. Other black women will get upset that he's with a white woman. You know, so does it stem, you know, it kind of, you had a trigger that question, is it stemming from inferiority? Do you feel inferior to this white woman? And that's where the anger comes from, as opposed, you know, to seeing it, okay, it's just another woman. Let's be happy. She found a great man. So where, you know, because you see it, I see it with my friends, you see it on television, kind of, you know, that role. So I guess the kind of, maybe that's the first step, is to identify why do we feel a certain way or anger towards other races, you know, to be able to build that bridge that gap, and where we could celebrate the humanity versus a color.
I want to say one thing to that, and that's, you know, I've recently heard that discussion on YouTube, the Karen Hunter Show. Mm-hmm. Which I love Karen. And she had a couple ladies on, and they were talking about, you know, how African American women feel that the white women take their men, kind right. of. That was the discussion, right? And so they were expressing their emotion around all mm-hmm. of that. And so I think you're speaking to that, Jennifer, you know, you're talking to that.
Right.
Yeah.
So okay. Just to understand the why around it, especially when, you know, we voice unity, but yet when we're kind of almost personally attacked or affected, we point out the divide, and we are the ones who are dividing.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I personally don't have that feeling, though I know that the sentiment exists. And I would say that it's tied to what we were speaking about earlier. It has to do with anti-Black attitudes, right? And proximity to whiteness. So, I mean, there's been how many hundreds of years that have been put into dividing and separating and categorizing us out so that there is no unity. And so I think that when there's an othering that happens, our beauty is not appreciated. Like, it's okay to have all of the curves of a Black woman or a tan, but not be Black. Like, there's a bunch of other stuff that goes with it. That I think sometimes people feel like, in that circumstance anyway, that there's a choice, that someone is saying that this beauty or this person is better or above you. And then questioning, like, does that mean the person hates their Blackness? And, like, people have preferences and people like what they like. But I think that that really ultimately what it gets down to and what it comes back to is knowing and loving yourself. And if you know and love yourself, then it doesn't matter, you know, what other people are doing. You don't feel threatened. You don't feel like there's a shortage of love that will come to you. But I think, yeah, it's again about the anti-blackness in all communities, right? It's not just existent in white communities. It exists in our communities as well. And having real conversations about that, including colorism and grade of hair and all of these things that have been used to separate and define us by other people, you know, not ourselves.
Can I add to that? Yes.
Yes, please.
Knowing and loving yourself, like you said, will mean that you're going to choose a partner for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. Because there are men that choose white women out of self-hatred, or that choose lighter-skinned black women out of not liking themselves. Mm-hmm. And so when you learn to like yourself, then you know you're going to make the choice, whoever you choose, because love knows no color, whoever you choose is going to be out of a genuine love for the person, not because you're running away from yourself.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, in the first show that we did, I talked about how I discovered that I was a racist myself. And I discovered that I wasn't a racist against black people, because I was pretty much raised in the black community from the time I was a little girl. And that was the place where I was felt accepted. And even when that was in Germany, and then when I came to the United States and then met my first boyfriend, which was Latrice's uncle, and then I was accepted into the family, you know, as a beloved, right? As a family member. But the racism outside of being called names and all of these things started building a hatred within my own being against my own race. And it was interesting to, you know, and I had gotten to the point where I didn't want to date outside of my race. I didn't want to, I had hatred against white people because of the discrimination and all of that. And I discovered, you know, after moving to a town that had one black person, that's when I discovered, oh my God, I'm here to face my demon. I'm here to face my own self-hatred. And that was when I was faced with, because all of a sudden there were no social belonging, no acceptance. And I was faced with seeing the people that I had built up hate against, you know? And I was able to look at that hatred within myself and meet that part of me so that I can bring it into unity within myself and bring it into healing and love and welcome the white community back into my world, goodness gracious, you know? So really that's, you know, it's interesting. I love what you said, David, you know, working with yourself, you being an educator, you being a teacher, all of you guys are, every single one of you is an educator, an influencer in the world. And that's why we're having these discussions is, you know, whatever we're not talking about, whatever has been hidden, whatever has been suppressed, whatever we can do to get in good or trouble, to be better citizens, to make the world a better place. Because all of you, I don't know about you, Christielle, but I know the rest of you have children that you're raising. And so you're raising the future leaders that are future leaders on this planet. And of course, we want to raise these children from the place of truth and self-love and acceptance and wholeness, no matter what their color is of their skin, right?
Right. I think that's the only way to really break that cycle. Because me growing up, you know, being of biracial descent, I grew up with the black side of my family. And I remember when I started dating, I had a boyfriend, brought him home, and he was dark skin. And I remember my grandmother was like, no, that's not acceptable. You know, no, you're too pretty to be with a dark skin guy. You need to kind of go, you know, lighter. Like, no, yeah. And you're looking and I'm like, but he's the same color as you. Like, I don't understand. like, yo, what you're saying to me? So I think some of it is generational and from home, you know. And I remember having the argument, like, you know, because I just couldn't, because I'm looking at her and I'm looking at, like, so what are you saying about yourself, you know? And then when I did get married, my daughter's father was white and welcomed with open arms, and it was really pushed, you know. 18 years old, I got married because it was pushed. No, you need to marry this guy. You found the one that you need to be with. And, you know, and I remember it was a very volatile relationship. And when wanting to leave, it was like, no, you can't leave him. Don't leave him, you know, because of the, you know, you got one of that guy, the stature or whatever, the stigma that tied to that.
Yeah.
It was really profound to them.
And that's what I was sharing, that nobody's having this conversation about how Black people see themselves compared to other races. And your story just illustrates that beautifully. Like, we feel different because you are next to a white person. And those conversations, we need to look at ourselves, as David was saying, and heal from those stories, because that's terrible. Instead of right now, the conversation is, okay, how are other people treating us and all of that? But we don't talk about how we see ourselves.
Right.
You know, how your grandma was seeing herself was probably what David was saying. She didn't love herself enough, so she wanted to run away from herself through you. Come, right. You know, bring someone that is less dark than I am, because I don't love myself enough. I need to be next to somebody that will not remind me who I am. So those conversations, probably we should have them more to heal as Black people, as African-American, African descendants. We heal from that story that we are less than other people. They told us that and we believed in that, and now we want to get validation from them that we are good enough. We need to be next to them. We want to relate to them. We want to, yes, we need to work together, but as human beings, not because, like, for your family, get married to a white person, you'll be better. It will make you somewhat better than if you are with a Black person, right? So those stories are just the things I was talking about that are engraved in the subconscious mind of the Black population. Those things we are running away from ourselves. Why? Why do we hate ourselves so much? Why do we feel like we are less than other people?
I think it's important to note that that type of hatred, right, of self is not something that is natural for us. It's something that was brutally placed into our families and into our systems of being and operation. So even now, that legacy still exists, but there used to be a time really when the conversation was about advancing the race. And if your children were lighter and they had straighter hair and could pass the brown paper bag test, they had a lot of more opportunities, right? So some of the throwback from that we're seeing that's been passed down generational is about really wanting to be able to survive. We're talking about life and death, you know, for these circumstances. And I think it's important to note that for other people that are listening that may not be as informed about the culture, like, it's important to note that that was something that helped us survive and sustain, you know, but it has a negative impact as well.
That's why the key, you know, I'm a history teacher, so the key is knowing your history and your story, your culture. And when one understands that, comes to understand how our psyches and mentalities got twisted, and to understand, I heard it said, I can't remember who said this, but if they said, basically, if you don't know who you were before you're enslaved, then you're still a slave. Mm-hmm. You basically, your understanding of yourself is totally from that frame of a enslaved or colonized mm-hmm. framework. And like Chrisielle, if you got people from the continent that maybe were not enslaved, but they were colonized, if you don't know who you were before you colonized, you're still colonized, right?
So true. Yeah. You
know, I just had an experience this past year teaching to middle schoolers, who many of whom were Mexican-American. And, you know, it was Columbus Day, so I did a one-off lesson on Christopher Columbus. It was deep. Like, they kids were like, dang, oh, so there were kids that didn't know that Spanish was the language of their colonizer, and that's how they came to get Spanish. They didn't understand that their from the violent collision of indigenous people and Spanish conquistadors and such. And they are the product of that. And I said, yeah. And so they were really saddened and taken aback by that. And so then I said, but check it out. Look what you made of it. Look what you managed to, if you're Mexican, you managed to make a country. You took that traumatic experience and you made the best of it. That's what colonized people have to do. They have to make the best of it. But you know, in Mexico, if you go and somebody says they're Indio, that's a put down.
Yeah, there's also the
African. And I had a girl in my class. I really, Claire, I got Spanish blood. My family told me, and well, here's what the Spanish did. So you have to own that part, but own the other part and be good with all parts of you.
Yeah, like even within that community, not a lot of people are familiar with the fact that there were lots of Africans sent into Mexico. And so there's also colorism that exists from that as well. It's widespread. It's part of our history, part of who we are as a people.
Or if you understand, I got to throw this one in. You understand, okay, the conflict between Mexico and the United States. Well, why was there the war in Texas, and remember the Alamo and all that? Well, Mexico didn't want to allow slavery in Texas. Mexico had cut off slavery. And so the United States citizens that wanted to move into Texas, they wanted to have slavery. That's why they went to war, to keep slavery. So there's a bond where if you're African American, you shouldn't be mad about immigrants coming in. You should have, like, we're in this situation together.
And David, I really, what you just shared reminds me of what is happening in Cameroon right now, where, you know, people come and colonize you and you forget who you were before they came in. In Cameroon, we have more than 256 dialects. So French and English are our official languages to be able to communicate with each other. French, of course, colonized us. Before them, we had England. So when there is a part of Cameroon that speaks English and there is a part that speaks French, I'm from the French side. But right now there is a war, like almost a civil war in Cameroon, because people identify so much with those two languages that they feel different. They forget we're all Cameroonians before the French people came in or the England people came in. They forgot about that. Right now they feel like, oh, because we speak English, we are marginalized by the people that speak French. All of a sudden we are not friends. We are not brothers and sisters anymore. All of a sudden we are not Cameroonians anymore. Now we identify to those two languages that are not even ours. We fight for English and French. Yeah. How crazy.
It just goes to show how you can plant something and it runs by itself for a while. Mm-hmm. You put another program in there.
And it is, you know, it's so fascinating, isn't it? Everything we're talking about here, it's really juicy. It's like we can see how much work we really have to do. How much work there is to do. It's hard to believe that we are in this place, but educating each other, having these conversations, sharing openly our awakening and our truth that we are sovereign being first and foremost. Each and every person is free within themselves and their divine love creator, right? And coming from there and starting there as the truth, right? Yeah. Wow. So here we are. We've got like 10 minutes before we're complete for today. What do we want to, you know, how can folks be anti-racist? I think we're already answering these questions to start with yourself, find out where, where you are. And of course, it's really about education and finding those safe places to talk and finding community people that you could talk to. But what do you want folks to do? What do you want people to do? What do you want to leave people with when they're watching this broadcast, they're listening to it? What can we do? What can we offer them?
I think it's really just communication and acceptance. Because, you know, right now with the whole political war going on with, you know, nominations and our political candidates, I think it's understanding that people have a viewpoint, but, you know, instead of bashing their viewpoint, educate them on yours. Because if you start off with bashing someone, they're no longer willing to listen and to hear where you're coming from, or your story, or your flight and pain, why maybe their viewpoint is affecting you. So I think a lot of it stems from the initial approach of, you know, starting in that conversation. You know, conversate to hear and to listen as opposed to defend.
Yeah, I would say that Black people are not a monolith. That's number one, right?
Black people are not what?
Not a monolith. Like, there's going to be a differencing of opinions, experiences, cultures, even within our own like thing, right? But I think two of the big key takeaways that I would suggest when people are thinking about being anti-racist is, one, to understand that some Black people, most Black people, are tired. We are exhausted, right, about having to have this conversation over and over and over and over and over again. And I say that because you have to think about the relationship that you have with folks and what emotional labor you are asking them to take on when you're asking them to educate you, because there are lots of other available resources that are out there. The internet is your best friend. There are tons of books and libraries that you can pull from James Baldwin to Audre Lorde, and even newer texts, right? That can give you some idea of what's happening. I feel like for some white folks or self-identified white folks, like, they're just waking up to this reality that this is real for us. So I would say we're tired, right? Do your work, do your due diligence, right? And then understand that it's okay to ask questions, but that you shouldn't expect to be educated. We shouldn't have to do that work for you. And then the second thing is that being racist, right, is not necessarily a character thing where you can say, well, only bad people are racist. Right? Like, it's a behavior. It's the way that you're interacting with folks. It's about not being aware of privileges that you've been afforded that others haven't, right? So like, the fact that I'm Black definitely makes any other struggle that I go through that much harder, right? So I would suggest, you know, keeping those things top of mind. Like, it's about relationship. Like, I understand that there's a point where people feel guilty, but our pain shouldn't be centered in how it feels for you. You know, it really is about what we're experiencing and what you can do by talking to folks who look like you and your family to try to correct behaviors and attitudes.
I love that.
You're passing it to me. I'd say, well, remember that we're spirits in physical form having a human experience. I stole that one from Dr. Wade Nobles. Credit where credit is due. And that everybody has a story and perspective that's valid. If you don't understand somebody else's story, then you probably don't know their story. And I guess, like you said, I mean, I've been a diplomat, an ambassador my whole life, whether I wanted to be or not, right? That's the way people of color are basically thrust into the situation. I think people that identify as white have to ask themselves this question. They only make up less than 10% of the people on earth, right? You have to ask yourself, how is it that you came to control so much of the physical and material aspects of the world? And then if you're honest about that, then you have to ask yourself, what would equity look like? What would it really look like if people, there's only the human race, right? If people control things in proportion to their numbers, what would the world look like? And can you be okay with that? Because if you're not, then you're probably holding on to something that may not be yours. And until we get to that point as like one human race and really understand the real definition of equity, you know, that's kind of our measuring stick of where we are.
Thank you, David. Wow, fantastic. Christelle? What would you like to leave us with?
What I would like to use is a quote from Steve Harvey. He said, "Speak first to understand, then to be understood." In this difficult conversation, I just want us to be aware that there is a lot of pain going on within the Black community, pain that we can't even really fully understand ourselves because it comes from generations even before us. So we even have a hard time to understand why the pain is so deep because it's coming from too far. So we need to heal, do that work, and try to understand why the pain is so deep, why it's so painful to face what is happening right now. Because as David was saying, we are all spirits in human bodies. We, at the end of the day, there is no white, there is no black, there is none of that. We create those illusions and we live in that. So now that we're in that illusion where we feel different or we are treated differently, it hurts, it's painful. And yesterday, I don't know if because I had the conversation with you, I saw a video again that was showing how Black people are treated in Lebanon. That's, you know, that's not America. It's just in the whole world where Black people, for some reason, are seen differently, for some reason that we can't explain. I'm not sure we have the answers to that. But since that's the case, what can we do about it? How can we get past that position that we accept? We accepted at some level, maybe after programming generations after generations, we became those people. So how can we change that as Black people? How can we heal from that pain? And how can we show up differently in the world in a way where people will not define who we are? People will not have that much power on us anymore. Because at the end of the day, we get to decide. We get to give that power to people or not give it. So how can we take back that power as human beings and show up that way so that we don't expect people to act a certain way for us to feel good? We don't expect people to give us something, but we are just the people that nobody can treat a certain way. Nobody can see a certain way. They will just see us as humans because that's all we all are.
I don't know about you all, but I'm melting in the presence of all of your wisdom and authentic expression and wisdom. It's like I've got the chills all over my body from all of you. And I just, I feel like, you know, the audience today that's going to listen to this, I'd love for all of you that are listening to this later, that are watching this video, please share it with your community. Please share it with your friends and with your family, because what was shared here today was pure. It was pure wisdom and pure experience from people that, like Latrice so very well put, are exhausted. And for the white people, figure it out. Figure it out for yourself. You know, it's time. You know, there's, like she said, there's a lot of resources out there. And there's just, all the support is there. And for us to really now look at how we're going to come together in unity to build and make the world a better place and be the change that we want to see in the world, with the great leaders that have been showing us the way for a long time. When John Lewis passed over these last couple weeks, I was in such deep grief because I was feeling like, who do we have now? Who do we have now that's going to be, you know, coming from the place, the way that he came from, that level of integrity? And Spirit reminded me, we have ourselves. We have ourselves, and we're the ones that need to be that change that we want to see, because they're, you know, they've laid to rest, they've come and done their part, and now it's our turn. So thank you so much, my beloved co-hosts, for coming here today to create the beloved community. I appreciate you being here, and thank you, audience, for listening and tuning in, and you're going to see us again next time. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Cornelia Stephanie Show, Lady Boss, Women Inspiring Women, featuring leading edge entrepreneurs who are putting the focus on empathic leadership in today's modern day world. Text the word Cornelia to the number 22828 and receive her weekly newsletters. For more information on Cornelia Stephanie and her extraordinary work, or to listen to past shows, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.